prepare for a true revolution.
Actually, you can prove God exists.
Questioning tradition, because what you've been taught isn't always true.
The truth will set you free.
The truth will set you free.
And this is where truth and reason meet.
This is where faith and reason meet.
Faith and reason.
Head on, like a freight train and a trolley car.
I got a tagline wrong.
You did. That's all right.
You're going to beat me up now.
Whatever. Hey, I'm Dave. With me is Pastor Jeff of Revolution Church.
Good morning. Glad you guys are listening today. I am so glad you're here with us because we got a great show. We're gonna convince you all to become agnostics today.
Woo!
Yes.
Yeah.
You need to become an agnostic.
I was reading the notes today.
Well, like, not you, but we're suggesting people become agnostics in general.
Okay, let's break down the word agnostic.
Okay.
Okay. A meaning lack of or none.
Yeah.
Gnostic meaning knowledge.
Yeah, very
of
good,
God,
Dave.
I guess.
That's amazing.
So we're going to pretend we have no knowledge of God today.
Really, an agnostic is someone who says they really just don't know if there is a God or not. Yeah. And what we're going to say is that being an agnostic, is a much better position than being an atheist. And so that's what we're going to do. We're going to suggest people become agnostics today if you haven't made up your mind yet.
Oh, my.
We're going to look at an article by Paul Copen called The Presumptuousness of Atheism.
Oh, so we're going to kind of turn the tables.
We're going to turn the tables on the atheists today. Instead of defending, because usually we present arguments for Christianity, like logical arguments for the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ or for God's existence, or we listen to atheist arguments, and then we respond to them and show why we would disagree.
So we're going to kind of go from a different angle. We're going to prove atheism wrong.
So to speak. We're going to prove that atheism is untenable, that it's not reasonable.
Like we're all in the same boat, kind of.
Yeah, there you go.
Hey, I can't prove nothing, you can't prove nothing, right?
Well, no, I wouldn't say that. But we're going to, basically, the title of Paul Copen's article, The Presumptuousness of Atheism, explains it. It's very presumptuous to be an atheist. And we're going to talk about that. And we're just going to read this article. We're also going to link to it at our website, truthrevolution.tv. So if you want to read this article for yourself, just go to truthrevolution.tv. We're going to link to it. It's at equip.org. It's a great organization, Christian Research Institute. And Paul Copen's a great author as well.
That's right. We also have a Bible contradiction coming up.
Yes.
The Bible's wrong. Who knew it?
And we do this every single week. Is there an easy way to prove that the Bible is not contradicting itself? And we got the cracked acronym. We're going to solve one of those. And we got a listener question.
Yeah, we're going to tackle that.
That's right. And this one's about whether or not the argument from design has been proven wrong. So we're going to try to tackle that if we have time. But okay, so today let's jump into this article by Paul Copen.
Okay.
This is atheist Anthony Flew.
I've heard that name a couple times.
Yeah. He's not an atheist anymore, but he was an atheist. And he said, the onus of proof must lie upon the theist.
Well, wait a minute.
What?
We are quoting an once atheist about theism, who's not an atheist anymore.
Right.
So basically, would he call you up and say, hey, why are you doing that?
Well, actually, do you remember Gary Habermas, who we had on the show about a month ago?
Yes.
He actually had just discussions and debates with this Anthony Flew, who's an atheist. And because as a result of Gary Habermas's discussions, in part, he changed his opinion.
Right on.
And so he converted to theism, or
good
at
job,
least
Gary.
Deism. So
right there on the front lines.
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly where Flew is right now in his beliefs, but he's at least a deist, maybe a theist, possibly even a Christian. I'm not even sure. So anyway, but he was an atheist, and he said the onus of proof must lie upon the theist. What does that mean? That means if you're a believer in God,
you carry the burden of proof.
You have to prove it.
Right.
What they're saying, I mean, this is what most atheists will say is,
hey, prove it to me. That's what,
prove it to me. Yeah. Prove God exists. I don't have to prove that God doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
And, off the bat, it sounds like a reasonable thing to say, because we would say, oh, well, you have to prove someone's guilty, because you can't prove that they're not guilty.
Well, not only that, but it's like, it's a show me thing. And we are so into the five senses and stuff like that. We want to touch, see, feel. I guess touch and feel the same thing, but hear. But you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
It's like we have to see evidence and feel evidence. And when you're talking about atheism, philosophically,
it's very hard to prove a negative.
Right.
And you can't always do that. Prove that pink unicorns don't exist.
I saw one on TV.
You know,
one
like
time.
It's hard to prove a negative. So the atheists right. say, "Well, I'm not proving you're." They say you're the one who's positing a God. Mm-hmm. You're saying something is out there, so you need to prove to me that it's out there.
Right.
I'm not going to prove that something's not out there because all sorts of people could say anything's out there. I'm not going to. Mm-hmm. Well, so but really, we're going to go through Paul Copen's article and we're going to talk about how presumptuous this is for them to say that the onus is on us. It's very presumptuous. We have to remember the atheist has a burden of proof as well. And Paul Copen outlines this again. This is from straight from his article. So if you want to read the article in full, go to truthrevolution.tv and check it out.
Right.
Now, also before I get into those, we are from Revolution Church in Salina, Kansas, and we would love for anyone to come out to Revolution Church just as you are right now.
Right, yeah. And you know what? If you can't make it, you always catch us online.
That's true. Yep. Live.salina-revolution.com. Or you can get just truthrevolution.tv. I'm just saying, get to the site. I'm going to say it a million times. Truthrevolution.tv. You can get over, watch our services live online Sunday mornings at 9, 11:15 a.m. It's just come as you are right now. Yeah, you know,
it's all about one thing. It's all about worshiping and learning about God.
Yeah, we want to know Jesus. We want people to know Jesus. We're not perfect. No one here is perfect, but we want to know who God is. And go. I think most of you do too. So come on out and let's learn about God together today. All right. Anyway, so the atheist is very presumptuous because, as Copen says, even if the theist could not muster good arguments for God's existence, atheism still would not be shown to be true.
Right. Here's the thing. Here's the question that I got.
What?
Is if they expect us to show proof for what we believe in, does that mean that they have no proof for what they believe in? And then they're going to make fun of us because they're doing the same thing.
Now, hold on. You're jumping the gun here.
Oh, am I?
You're okay. That's good. This is good.
I'll slow my roll.
You're getting to the next point. All right. This first one, though, he's saying, look, just even if we as Christians, let's just say that we can't prove Jesus mm-hmm. rose from the dead. Let's say we can't prove that God exists. Does that mean atheism is true? No. We always like to say, okay, well, let's just grant their argument. And see what happens. If it's true that we have no good reason to believe in God, does that mean there is no God?
No.
Even if, and this isn't true, but even if Christians didn't have any reason to believe in God, it doesn't mean that atheism's right.
Well, there are so many Christians out there, we've talked about this before, so many Christians out there that don't know why they believe.
Right, and so, that's a ridiculous position to be in. But Copen goes on, he says, to show that an argument is invalid, and he's quoting an atheist here, Kai Nielsen, to show that an argument is invalid or unsound is not to show that the conclusion of the argument is false. Okay, just because your arguments are bad doesn't mean your conclusion's bad. I could say, for instance, well, number one, red puppies are blue. Number two,
what?
I ate a dog for lunch. Therefore, my name is Jeff. Okay, now my conclusion is true, but my argument is awful.
It's all over the board.
Okay, just because your argument for God doesn't work doesn't mean that there's no God.
Right.
So atheists, first of all,
that was quite a silly argument.
Even if they refute our arguments for God's existence, it doesn't mean that atheism is true. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
All right, so that's the very first thing. Second of all, he goes on and he says this. Dave, will you read that second paragraph there, my friend, starting with, second, the presumption of atheism.
Second, the presumption of atheism demonstrates a rigging of the rules of philosophical debate in order to play into the hands of the atheist, who himself makes the truth claim.
Wait, they make a truth claim.
They do. Yeah.
What is their claim?
Their claim is there is no God. That's an absolute. There is no God.
That is a claim. And this is the important part about atheism that we have to understand. Atheism, and Copen says, is just as much a claim to know something, God does not exist, as theism is, God exists.
Right. You can't just take a pacifist or a passive belief about atheism.
Right. You know, you could say, I think that Santa Claus is real,
mm-hmm.
or I believe Santa Claus is not real, or I know Santa Claus is not real. That would be an atheistic Santa Claus argument. Or you could say, I just don't know.
Right. Okay? I'm beginning to see your whole agnostic view now.
Right.
Thing about, you know, hey, it's
better to actually be an agnostic, because when you say I'm an atheist, you're actually saying, I know I can prove there is no God, because that is your belief. There is no God. Right. Now you have a burden of proof to show that this deity does not exist.
Right. Because I'm starting to track with you now.
You are making a truth claim. Let's continue to read that paragraph there.
Okay, Alvin
Plantinga.
Plantinga?
He's an amazing philosopher. You got to check him out. He's awesome. Seriously, he's awesome, Dave.
Is he really?
He's awesome.
I'm going to take your word for that.
Okay.
The burden of proof
falls on
totally
me.
On you, yeah.
All right.
Anyway, Alvin correctly argues that the atheist does not treat the statement, God exists and God does not exist, in the same manner. The atheist assumes that if one has no evidence for God's existence, then one is obligated to believe that God does not exist, whether or not one has evidence against God's existence.
Okay, see what he's saying there?
Yes.
He's saying they're treating it like, just if we run out of evidence, then you are obligated to believe that there's no God.
Yeah. There's no cookies on this table. Therefore, no cookies exist.
Right. That's what the atheist is saying. Right. Just there because there's no cookies right in front of me, then you have to believe no cookies exist
there
at all.
There needs to be cookies on this table.
There should be. Who didn't bring the cookies today? This is ridiculous. All right. But anyway, I don't know how they expect us to do a show about atheism without cookies.
Right.
I'm all fluttered now. All right. Fluttered?
Fluttered? Flustered, I think that's what.
So atheism, they're making the claim there are no cookies in the entire world.
Right.
Now that's a big claim to make. Just because there's no cookies in front of you doesn't mean you can make that claim. So, you know, therefore the atheist denial, he says, of God's existence needs just as much substantiation as does the theist claim. They have to prove it just like we do.
Right.
The atheist must give plausible reasons for rejecting God's existence. And that's good.
Right. And that makes me feel better because now the onus isn't totally on me.
No, it's not totally on you.
Right.
And in fact, I think it's important to say we want to be reasonable. We want to do what the most reasonable course of action is. Look, we look at the evidence. Is there a God? Is there proof that there is no God? Which one does the evidence lean towards?
Right. And we've talked, we've been, what, a little over 2 years now talking about this stuff. And we always say, ask questions, search. Look for truth, because that's what we want. And if we find out the truth, if we find out that God really doesn't exist beyond a shadow of a doubt, why would we believe in him?
Yeah, that's right. And what we want to do is say, what's more reasonable?
Right.
We don't say there has to be 100 million tons of evidence for the existence of God, otherwise you should be an atheist. That's not the right response. It's look, let's just start out agnostic. We don't know. Where does the evidence lead? Is there more reason to believe that there is some creator of all this stuff?
Mm-hmm.
Or do we have evidence that there is nothing? And I don't think there is that evidence.
Well, and I think we have a track record of showing
that
there is a God.
Again, at truthrevolution.tv, tons of evidence there you can look up. All right, hey, I think we need to go ahead and answer Bible contradiction today, Dave. What do you think?
I like Bible contradiction.
All right, here we go. We're going to answer Bible contradiction, and this one is about Noah. I think you're going to like it.
Bible contradiction.
All right, Jeff.
All right, Dave.
Answer this question.
I will.
Why did Noah require a dove to find land in Genesis 8?
To find the land. He sent the dove out to find the land. Right. The answer's right there.
Well, if he and God were on speaking terms in Genesis 6. In Genesis 6, 13 through 21, you can read it for yourself. It's the account of Noah's instruction, or God's instruction to Noah. And, you know, I'm not going to sit down and read the whole thing because that's a long passage. But we go all the way down to Genesis 8. Genesis 8, 8. Then he sent out a dove to see if the waters had receded from the surface of the ground. Now, why would he do that if he was already on speaking terms with God? Wouldn't God just say, hey, Noah, there's ground. And I'm telling you, you don't need to send that dove out.
And they say this is a contradiction?
It is. It's a bona fide contradiction.
It's too bad this is radio, because I am rolling my eyes.
He is totally rolling his eyes.
This is not a contradiction.
It's not.
Okay.
Why?
The second C in our cracked acronym is credibility.
Uh-huh.
Let's give a little credit here. The author of Genesis isn't so stupid that they would contradict themselves by saying God speaks to Moses and then God doesn't speak, or Noah. God speaks to Noah and then God doesn't speak to Noah.
Right.
Let's just look at this. Did God in Genesis 6 say that God spoke to Noah and he was going to always continue to speak to Noah? No, God never said that. Right?
Right.
God did not say that.
Right.
And so when God stops speaking to Noah, there's good reason to say, hey, all right, God isn't talking to Noah anymore. And then Noah's going to send out a dove. I mean, this isn't a contradiction. God can choose to speak or stop speaking to whoever he wants to, whenever he wants
That's true.
Just because I stop talking to you doesn't mean that contradicts the reality that I did a radio show with you last week.
Right.
I mean, this is not a contradiction.
It's we are still on speaking terms, by the way. So.
I'm done. All right, truthrevolution.tv. We're going to be back right after this listener question and more about atheists.
Hey, this is Pastor Jeff from Revolution Church.
And I'm Dave. We've been growing and now we're going to two services.
Sunday morning at 9 a.m. or 11:15 a.m. Check us out at salinarevolution.com.
What if someone had never been to church before?
Well, most people here hadn't been for a long, long time, if ever, so don't worry, you'll fit in fine.
What to wear? Just be yourself. Jeans, t-shirt, tats, whatever.
Revolution Church, Sunday morning, 9 or 11:15 a.m.
salinarevolution.com or check us out on Facebook.
Revolution!
Hi, this is Pastor Jeff from Revolution Church. Not only am I the host of the Truth Revolution radio program, but I'm also a foster parent. Did you know that there are only 20 or 30 children in Salina that need to be adopted right now? Did you know that there are children in foster care who want to live in Salina, but are sometimes placed in other towns because we don't have enough foster homes here? I want to challenge you to consider foster care today. If you're interested in doing foster care, go to kfapa.com, that's K-F-A-P-A, as in the Kansas Foster and Adoptive Parent Association.com, K-F-A-P-A.com, and get more information. You can request information, email and ask any questions you want, or possibly even sign up to take a class about foster parenting. It's easier and more difficult than you'd ever imagine, but it's also more rewarding than you'd ever imagine. Consider fostering and helping a child in need today.
Truth Shots from TruthRevolution.tv and Revolution Church. Here's your host, Dave, and Pastor Jeff.
Let's clear up a misconception about the Holy Spirit.
Sounds good, but which one?
Acts 13 says, while they were worshiping the Lord and fasting, the Holy Spirit said...
Now pause here for a minute. The Spirit spoke. Does a force or a person speak?
A person. And that's what the Holy Spirit is. Not meaning that he's a human person, but that he has personhood and shouldn't be thought of as a force.
Right. The verse continues, and the Spirit says, set apart for me Barnabas and Saul for the work to which I have called them.
The Spirit has plans, apparently, and work that he's called people to accomplish.
Again, mysterious unknown forces don't make specific plans. The Holy Spirit has a mind of his own, makes plans, chooses people, executes those plans, and shares them.
In John 15, Jesus talks about the Holy Spirit and says, he will testify about me. Note, he used the word he.
Not it or that mystery. So friends, let's remember, the Holy Spirit has personhood.
TruthRevolution.tv.
Did you know that Truth Revolution is supported by Revolution Church and listeners like you?
It takes quite a bit of time and money to produce a quality radio show.
If you find Truth Revolution helpful, a donation would be a powerful way to make sure the message keeps going out.
This ministry is doing more than Dave and I imagined it would at the beginning.
You got that right.
And as we grow, we want to keep the goal the same, to be the place where faith and reason meet.
Donations are accepted at www.truthrevolution.tv or Revolution Church.
Truth Revolution.
And we're back.
Be an agnostic.
Totally.
Not an atheist. All right. If you're a Christian, we're not saying become an agnostic.
No.
But if you are an atheist, we're saying it's untenable. You really should be an agnostic because it's real presumptuous. Because you also, as an atheist, you have a burden of proof. Now, I have atheist friends, and we get along. We love
really,
to talk.
You're not really annoying to them like you are to me? That's nice. He treats them nicer than he treats me.
Shut up! No, I'm just kidding. Okay, I said that on. All right, so anyway, I'm nicer to my atheist friends than I am to Dave.
That's okay.
But that's because Dave deserves being mean to. Anyway, so if you're an atheist, though, even if you're my friend... Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's more reasonable to say you're an agnostic unless you have evidence and proof.
Right. So you're saying that people without proof need to be agnostic rather than atheist because you have no proof.
Well, unless they have proof, then I'd like to see that proof.
Yeah, so would I.
We've checked out some of the proof, and so far it hasn't bore out. But all right, let's get back to this article by Paul Copen. Mm-hmm. And he says, a third, in the absence of evidence for God's existence, agnosticism, not atheism, is a logical presumption. And that's kind of what we've been saying all along. I mean, that would just make sense. He says, even if arguments for God's existence do not persuade, atheism should not be presumed. Because atheism is not neutral. Pure agnosticism is.
Right.
Atheism is justified only if there is sufficient evidence against God's existence.
And again, we believe there's none.
Well, yeah. I mean, we don't think there's... I wouldn't say there's none, But I would say I don't think there's any good
right.
or evidence that would pan out fully to say that there's no God. You know, I mean, people will make the argument. They'll say, well, I think evil is a reason to suggest that there's no God. And that would be like a piece of evidence. But I don't think it pans out.
Okay, I see what you're saying.
Because, for instance, when you say, well, okay, if you think this is evil, how do you know it's evil? Where does that judgment for moral capacities come from mm-hmm. if there is no God?
Yeah, because that's one of the arguments that I've had used against me. Well, where did evil come from, you know?
Yeah, and so if you are saying that there is good and evil, you're already making the assumption that there's a spiritual thing out there and God exists. So if you're saying God doesn't exist because there's evil, well, you're making a contradictory statement.
There you go.
All right, anyway, that's not what the show's about today. But then Copen goes on, he says, fourth, to place the belief in Santa Claus or mermaids and belief in God on the same level is mistaken. Now, this is sometimes what atheists will do.
Mm-hmm.
They say, well, I don't believe in Santa Claus and neither do I believe in God because it's the same thing. You know, they say, well, Santa Claus is this thing we made up to make us feel good, mm-hmm. new Christmas presents and stuff like that for our kids. God is the same thing. He's something we made up to feel good, to control our moral obligations, to control society, so on and so forth.
Right. And you'll see that argument a lot.
Yeah. But it's not the same thing. The issue, and Copen goes on, he says, the issue is not that we have no good evidence for these mythical entities. Rather, we have strong evidence that they do not exist.
Right.
See, we actually have evidence that Santa Claus does not exist right now.
Right. I mean, if Santa Claus really existed, why do parents run around trying to buy Santa Claus gifts for their kids?
Every single parent in the world right now has to buy presents for their child, or someone does, and has to write the name Santa Claus on them. And if Santa Claus is an actual being who actually delivers presents actually on December 25th to everybody, why is it that everybody has to make it up? They have to write the presents themselves.
Right.
Or write the name on the tag themselves and pretend it. Yeah, we have evidence he doesn't. We also have the evidence of the historical figure of Nicholas,
Saint
Nicholas, and mm-hmm. how that we have the evidence of how that turned into the legend, and mm-hmm. evidence how that got spread, and we have evidence about how Coke created the image of Santa Claus that we have today.
So there you go, atheist, no more Santa Claus arguments.
That's
gone.
Right, that's right. We have evidence that Santa Claus doesn't exist. But do you have evidence that God doesn't exist? See, when you make those claims, you have to have the burden of proof.
Right.
So, all right. Now, we're going to come back to this. We got more stuff, but I think we need to handle a listener question. We got a pretty good one this week. So let's go ahead and do a listener question. It's from a lady named Melissa.
I got a question.
All right. Melissa is going to ask the question. I'm in school.
Good for her. I'm glad.
Yeah. Stay in school. And my philosophy textbook says that the argument from design was no longer valid because evolution. Is that true?
Okay. And this drives me nuts.
Mm-hmm.
Drove me nuts, drives me nuts. It's going to continue to drive me batty. I don't know why in this particular philosophy textbook, and I don't know what the textbook is. I'm not sure what school it is, I guess. Our favorite question is always, is what they're claiming, if what they're claiming is true, does that mean what they imply? Okay, they're saying evolution is true. Therefore, the argument from design no longer works.
Right.
Okay, if evolution's true, does the argument from design no longer work? No, that's not true. It doesn't follow.
Right.
Okay, now we're going to get into this. First of all, let me just address this concept that the philosophy textbook would actually argue that the design argument is invalid. I don't know who wrote this textbook, but that is a crazy notion.
It is.
It'd be like the same as writing a textbook and put, if this is a secular school where they're supposed, and you know, this actually fits with today's topic.
Yeah.
If you're a secular school, you're neither supposed to be atheistic or theistic,
right.
Christian. You're supposed to be down the middle.
Mm-hmm.
This textbook is atheistic. They're saying this argument doesn't work for God.
Right.
They're not saying some theologians say it does, some atheists say it doesn't. They need to be more agnostic towards this argument. Anyway, that aside, even if evolution was 100% true, and they could prove evolution was 100% true, that would not rule out the teleological argument.
Okay, and the teleological argument is?
All designs imply designer. there's great design in the universe.
Therefore,
the universe has a great designer.
There you go.
Okay, just because there's great design in our world, we know there must be a great designer. So we look at the design, the complexity of our world, how everything's specifically put together and knit together very well. And we go, wow, this couldn't have happened by accident. You know, if you're walking through a forest and you think no one has been there for hundreds of years, mm-hmm. and then all of a sudden you stumble upon a brand new BMW in the middle of this jungle.
Right on.
You don't go, oh my goodness, what kind of tree did this fall off of?
The BMW tree.
Right? Like, you don't say that. You say, oh, obviously somebody was here, right? Because there's amazing design, complex design, very specific design. It could not have happened by accident. And when you see design that's so complex, so specific, you know someone made it.
Right.
Likewise, if you got a rock and it's shaped in the shape of an arrowhead, even something that simple, you know that's probably not an accident. Someone probably made it like that. What they're saying is evolution, because of biology, biological evolution, the teleological argument doesn't work, because they believe they've discovered a naturalistic mechanism that accounts for why our world looks designed.
Mm-hmm.
That's nice. But even if that was 100% true, you know what it doesn't rule out? The cosmological evidence. There is amazing cosmological evidence that is very designed. I mean, our Earth is in the exact right part of our solar system to produce life.
Yep, it's in the habitable zone.
In the habitable zone. Mm-hmm. Our galaxy is in the galactic habitable zone. Our solar system is in the galactic habitable zone.
We're in between two arms.
Two arms of the Milky Way, the Perseus and Sagittarius or something like that. We're in the perfect spot in the galaxy, the perfect spot in our solar system, the perfect distance from the sun. Our planet is the right size compared to our moon. The moon is the right density compared to our planet. The moon's the right distance from our planet. The moon's the right distance from our sun.
Wait a minute. It almost sounds like you're saying that it was meant to be that way.
Like, there's amazing design. There is amazing, I wouldn't say coincidences, but if you want to use that word, coincidences.
Well, you could say coincidences, but let's do the quotation quotes, finger marks.
Quote, coincidences.
Yeah.
Hundreds of things that had to come into play cosmologically for life to occur on planet Earth. So the argument from design works even out in space. And here's what's interesting is evolution had nothing to do with how Earth and the moon and the sun and our galaxy came to be.
Right.
These are not biological entities. So evolution, even if evolution was 100% true, the evolutionary scientists will admit it has nothing to do with how Earth was formed or where the moon came from.
Right. How animals progressed in their path has nothing to do with the universe.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
It's only one little part.
And we've had Hugh Ross from Reasons to Believe on, and he has a list of over 400 things. Do you remember that list?
Yeah, and we've posted it. And you know what? Let's go ahead and post that again. We'll post that again.
List? Okay, all right, that's fine. And so anyway, plus we've got, we don't have time, so I'm not going to go into it, but evolutionary science, just they cannot rule out the argument from design, even biologically. They just can't. Right. I mean, we get the Cambrian explosion, where all of a sudden, massive amounts of creatures just appear on Earth.
Right.
You get 3.8 billion years ago, comets and asteroids were pummeling the Earth and it sterilized our planet. Yet directly after that, complex life existed. It doesn't make sense for evolution.
Right.
The evolutionary model just doesn't make sense. And plus, if anything, scientific knowledge in our current age has shown us the complexity with it, which our eye and our brain, our heart, and our cells and molecules and DNA are designed.
Right.
So that's the answer for our question today. So good question, Melissa. Thanks for asking. I got a
question. All right. Let's get back into this atheism.
All right. We only got like a minute left.
All right.
All right. He goes on and he says, moreover, the theist can muster credible reasons for belief in God. And this is kind of his last point. Like, hey, you know what, atheists? We actually have credible reasons to believe. You may not think that they are 100% perfect reasons, mm-hmm. but there is actually reasons that show and shed some light on the existence of God.
Right. That's the thing is if some of these reasons don't seem credible to you, but add them all up.
Yeah. Well, and really, you think of it in terms of a scale with a level on either side.
Uh-huh.
An agnostic puts these scales on an even keel.
Right.
What is the evidence that God exists? What is the evidence that there is absolutely no God and you're sure of it? If the evidence comes out that looks like there is some evidence that God doesn't that God does exist, then that's where you've got to lean.
Right. The scales begin to lean toward theism.
All right. TruthRevolution.tv. You can listen to the show. You can catch other online content. Truth Shots Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. 60 Seconds of Truth.
There you go. And come on out to Revolution Church, man.
We really would love to have you out here. Revolution Church. We're here to help you learn about God, to participate in learning about God with you. We don't care. You can wear what you're wearing right now. So come on out. Also, if you want to donate to Truth Revolution, we'd appreciate it. It takes a lot of work and money.
Yeah, you can do that right on our website.
TruthRevolution.tv. Come back next week. Thanks for listening. I hope you have a great week. Now go be a Christian or an agnostic. But hopefully a Christian.